Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is noted poker authority Ed Miller, who is also into sports betting. Ed Miller, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, Bob. Thank you for having me again.
All right. You've been publishing for Card Player for a long time. In the past, most of your articles have been in poker, how to play poker better. And now they're starting to move in a different direction. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah. So I've actually personally kind of did a pivot to sports as my main focus personally a few years ago. And now I'm doing mostly sports stuff full time. And I was still writing about poker, and so I'm basically asked the Card Player guys if they wanted some sports betting content, and sports betting is, you know, the hot thing now. And so I am writing a pretty long series of articles of kind of hopefully informational articles. They're targeted for people who want to learn how to bet better.
And does it focus on specific sports, or does it focus on DFS as opposed to straight betting, or
right? So it's mostly going to be kind of general concepts, I would say. It's almost sort of general gambling concepts or general kind of market concepts, and then some that are more specific to sports betting. But I'm not going to it's not going to be about, you know, how do you model, you know, parks in baseball, or it's not stuff like that. It's more like gambling knowledge, gambling type content, and you know, I'm going to draw examples from various different sports, and I'll probably have some DFS stuff probably as a bonus also.
Now, in poker, your articles were primarily for a low-level cash game audience, 1-2 no limit, something like that. You did not write for Phil Ivey as your audience.
Right.
Will that be the same kind of focus in sports betting as well?
Yeah, for this series of articles, it's kind of the same audience. The person who would get a lot out of it would be someone who, you know, sports betting is coming state after state after state, likely. At least that's what we think is going to happen. And so the target audience would be, honestly, it's in Card Player, would be poker players who want to start learning how to bet sports or want to get interested in it and start doing it and do better. It's people who already bet sports but don't do it, you know, for a living. I don't know how much people who do it for a living are going to learn from these articles, but, you know, I'm going to do the best job I can to deliver helpful, useful information.
It's been quite a while since you've been on the show, and when you were on last, you were betting a lot of DFS at that time, and you were very vocal about how broken you thought DFS was.
Yes.
And did you continue with that? Did you get out of it? And what's going on with that?
So my sort of read on the play was that I started getting interested once I saw the marketing budgets get very large. You know, basically once these companies started raising large amounts of capital, VC capital, and then I saw that money going straight into marketing, I said, this is a gambling opportunity, because that's basically where a lot of all the plus EV gambling opportunities come from. They come from marketing budgets, really. I mean, the bigger the marketing budget, the more money is going to be available to an advantage gambler. This was true for, you know, the online casino boom way back when, online poker. It's true today with, you know, slot clubs and all that stuff. This is all marketing budget. You're not really necessarily making money from the game as much as from the marketing budget. Well, I saw the marketing budgets go to the sky, and I said, here, let me get in front of this. And then that really only lasted, well, I mean, some people got in earlier than I did, so it lasted a few years, but they had some, you know, they went crazy on the marketing. They got in some trouble, and they had some legal trouble, my read was, I'm not an insider on the industry, but my read was that a lot of the money that they were spending on marketing, they now kind of transitioned and to, you know, the regulatory stuff, to you know, lobbying and whatever else. I don't know what their internals were, but certainly the marketing money dried up, you know, certainly from where it was at one point, and that's kind of when I moved on. I said, this is, you know, you can grind this. I'm sure you can still grind it, but it wasn't, you know, the opportunity that I was jumping into was kind of gone, and I decided to mostly move on from it.
I think that's a really important concept. I mean, for our listeners, as you mentioned, it's not just DFS, but, you know, Bob, you've talked about when a new marketing director comes in at a casino, often they have a budget and they want to draw players in, and there are often opportunities there when that happens.
Yeah, the heyday of video poker was lots bigger markets, lots of budgets. We would have tournaments in the early 2000s, like at the Mirage, where the game was 9-6 jacks, which is 99.5. The slot club would be 0.67. You come in for the weekend, and they would be giving away $400,000 to the drawing winners of the weekend. And so all of us would come and just pound away for several hundred thousand dollars and get RFB and stuff, and they'd be giving away this money, and we had a good game to start with. And that doesn't happen anymore. But when I read an article about that general subject, the marketing in a card player article you wrote recently, and it was like an aha moment. Like, yeah, I didn't actually realize
that. Something to be looking for in regard to all this sports betting that's right. Coming, right? When they open these sports books, they're going to be spending money trying to get customers in. So,
yeah, I see the promotions they're running now. I don't know what the budgets look like on a macro scale, but, you know, they're running deposit bonuses, and they're running, you know, you get your money back if you bet this and it lost type of promotions. And I mean, that's all, you know, coming out of the marketing budget. And obviously that's all going to help a plus EV bettor's bottom line if you could take advantage of that stuff.
Now, DFS, DraftKings, they had a pretty public hiccup recently. Do you know anything about that?
I do. I'm aware of that. So they were running an event called the DraftKings Sports Betting Championship, I think is what it was called. The idea was it's basically a big tournament where you bet sports all weekend, and then whoever had the biggest bankroll at the end, it paid out like a poker tournament is how I say it, but like any of these tournaments. So whoever had the most got $1 million, and then it was like 350, 250, and then there were smaller prizes. But it was very, very top heavy type of prize structure. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I'll sort of give my basic thoughts on it. I mean, I think we'll see more of this type of thing in the future. The Westgate's run the Super Contest for years. I think that style of contest is going to continue to be popular. And this was a different format. This was over a short period of time, a kind of, I thought the format was fun. In the sense that it was like it was in real time, it was, you know, fast, you could watch the leaderboard. This is what I think DraftKings does the best, is this kind of sweat stuff where they build the leaderboard and you can watch everything happen, and oh, if this happens then so and so is gonna win and or take the lead, or you know, all that stuff I think is what they do well. Unfortunately, I think they really messed up the logistics of it. You know, I don't know the details, and I don't want to I wasn't in it, and so I don't know exactly what happened, but I do know that they had some logistical problems, and now some of the entrants are, you know, I think there was a lawsuit, and you know, I from my understanding of the situation, that it you know, finished in kind of a mess. Yeah,
part of the problem was there was very little clock time between the end of the early game and the start of the later game on a particular day. And so they were having trouble scoring the first game and putting money into account so they could bet the final.
Right.
Which, the thing that's bizarre about that to me is, I mean, they're an online presence. The scoring should be automatic. I mean, do they have human beings grading the bets? I mean, it just seems crazy.
Again, yeah, I don't know anything about, you know, DraftKings system. I do know a little bit in general about, you know, the industry, the sports betting industry, and I know that in general software is like a huge problem. I mean, this, you know, there's just, you know, every software has its own, none of them work quite like they're supposed to work, and some are worse than others, and you know, it's just I in general, that's an area that I, for the whole industry, I know could use, you know, improvement, a real slick, you know, end-to-end software back-end package where, you know, that goes from, you know, what does it look like when the bets get clicked in to, you know, how do the bets get handled by the server? Can it handle enough simultaneous transactions at the same time? You know, I mean, if your operator gets big enough, I mean, you're not Visa processing zillions of transactions a second, but it's roughly the same problem. You have to get all the transactions. You have to get them all right. You know, some operators want to send every bet to, you know, approval, which is a whole nother story. And, you know, and then that has to happen in real time. And then, you know, the price has to get recorded correctly. The bets then have to get graded on the other side. The accounts have to get credit. I mean, it's a complicated problem. That's, I certainly will say that. And, you know, I don't know how DraftKings system works, but obviously there were problems this weekend, and you know, that sucks.
So moving the conversation from that fiasco to in-stream betting, in-game betting, where you can bet whether or not the next play will be a run or a pass, among other things.
Right.
Is that a they would have the same kind of problems with that kind of software, wouldn't they? Approval or not?
Right. Yeah, sure. So,
well, but those bets aren't automated. I mean, which I guess is part of the problem, right? And there is a human sitting there deciding whether to approve your bet or not.
Right. Well, right. I mean, how that whole system works, I think, needs – what I think is I think in-play betting needs – I think people need to sit down and say, what does this look like going forward, you know, versus what it is today? So let me back up. So you could bet pregame, right? You could bet on sports pregame. And then the moment that the game starts, it kind of flips to in-play betting. And that's kind of a different can of worms. And it's different for a couple of reasons. One, it's a much harder problem for an operator, for a sports book to offer in-play betting. And the reason is with pregame, you take a bet and move the line, right? That's it. So basically anyone, you could not know anything. If you don't know anything about football, you don't know any players, you'd barely even know the teams. They give you this game and they say, here, book this game, you know, and you say, well, I don't know anything about these teams. Well, you could book the game, and this is how you do it. You just stick your finger in the air. You say -7. Okay. And then you put, you know, -10 on each side or whatever you're holding. And then you set the limit low. You set the limit to $100 and you put it up and then you take a bet. And whoever bets, you know, whatever side they bet on, you move the line, you know, and you keep moving the line as you take bets. And the way it works is, you know, someone wants that $100. Someone wants that plus EV on the $100 and they're going to take it, right? Let's say the line should be, you know, quote unquote, let's say it should be pick 'em and you put 7 up because you don't know what you're doing. Well, they're going to bet you +7 and then you move it. And then they're going to bet that and then you move it and they're going to bet that and you move it. And yeah, you lose on all those early bets, but you keep the limits low, right? Eventually you get to the point where those guys stop betting you. Right now your line has been moved, so you raise the limits. Now the sharper guys come bet you, you know, that want to win more money, and they come bet you and they take your number and they move it into place, and then they move the, so that's how, you know, pregame, by the time you get to the close, you know, the number has been kind of hammered into place by lots of different types of people, you know. And so that's how pregame gets booked. Well, now in play there's none of that. Because what the book is doing, let's say it's a football game, and let's say it's timeout, because let's talk about two different things. So first there's the timeout product at football. So football says the distinguishing factor of the timeout product is everyone has the same information. The sports book has the information, the viewer, the bettor, everyone has the same information. Everyone knows where the ball is, it went to timeout, the commercials are going, okay? Well, the book has to put up a number. Where does that number come from, right? Well, you can't make it the same way that you make the pregame number because there's not the time to have the low limit. And you basically just have to put up your number, take your limit, and, you know, go from there.
And so hope.
Right. So this is actually a service that operators can purchase. So they can purchase basically a feed of other people's opinions about what that line should be, you know, in real time. And there are several of these feeds that are offered. They're, in my opinion, varying quality. In my opinion, there's almost none of them that are currently in use in operators, at least for American sports, that don't have, you know, in my opinion, major errors in their, you know, math, really, frequently, you know, during games. So as a bettor, this is an opportunity. These are operators that are going to be offering, you know, betting opportunities in the game, and often the numbers are just going to be wrong, and you can bet into bad numbers if you want to. You know, from an operator's perspective, well, what can they do? They really only have, you know, the information. They have, what do they know? They know, well, let's talk about from the third-party provider. So from the operator's perspective, let's say that all they know is our third-party providers gave us these numbers, and they know their betting action, right? So they know what people have been betting during the game, you know, and then they can kind of make the line based on that. Well, what does the third party provider know? They know the same thing everyone else knows. They know what the score is, where the, you know, they know how many, you know, rushing plays have been run and how many passing plays. They see the same Tom Brady that you see, you know, everything, you know, and really they're, you know, just trying to draw the same conclusion you're trying to draw as you watch the game, you know? So that's why in-play and pregame are really two completely different products. And that's why, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, in-plays potentially could be a huge product. But it's the operators have to solve the problem that it's hard for them to put it up and have it be right and good.
Well, and the operators seem to be terrified of it.
Yeah, well, right, because it's hard. And so, you know, what operators – so let's talk about the timeout product. So what they'll tend to do – is they know they want this. They know they want to offer this to their customers. But yeah, they're worried about getting beat on it. So what do? They lower the limits. They raise the hold. You know, so they put, you know, an 8% hold on it, maybe. Instead. So pregame, they might have a 4% hold. You know, they might put 6, 7, 8% hold on the in-play. And it's a huge hold. And if you're talking about, you know, 50-50 type bets, you know, even – you know, minus 15 type bets. I mean, if you're just a customer that wants to just bet a game for fun, you know, you can't bet into an 8% hold on a 50-50 proposition for long and not just get fed up with it. I mean, you'll just lose and lose and lose, and it won't be fun, you know. So that's the problem that the operator and they won't offer big limits because they know. I mean, they know if they offer, let's say they offer 10,000, you know. Well, they know when they get hit with those $10,000 bets, you know, they know they know there's a reason, you know, and they want to avoid that. So, so those are the defensive measures they take, but the problem is it kind of kills the whole product. You know, it's your casual customers don't want the big limits. Okay. And they'll bet into the hold, but then they get sick of it. Yeah. They get sick of it. I mean, they're not going to last a whole season. But I mean, think about someone who's a Red Sox fan and who's a diehard Red Sox fan is going to watch every Red Sox game on TV and wants to bet the Red Sox games and then tell him he's got to bet into an 8% hold and he's got to last the whole season. I mean, he's not going to last a week, really. I mean, that's in my opinion, the situation of the in-play. So the industry needs to get to the point where they can put up high quality numbers, you know, at the timeouts for sure, that they can take bets on and where the hold is more like, you know, more like 3%, you know, than 8%, you know, or something like that. So that's kind of the part of the in-play story, I would say.
What about the approval process?
Right. So here's the other thing. So now let's say, so that was during a timeout, but they also offer betting, you know, during the play of the game. So like during a football game, you know, while the drive's going, in many operators, you'll see they'll put up lines. And often those lines will basically appear to be up the entire time. So it will appear they'll have a number up and the button will not be grayed out. And you can click on it and it'll say, hey, do you want to bet, you know, the Eagles plus 200 and you say, yes, I would. And they say, how much? And you say $500 and you say, okay. And you click the button and then you wait. And they make you wait often 7, 8, 10 seconds. And this is built into the software. This is not just your bet going to approval. This is actually them just sitting on your bet to see what happens in the game during those 10 seconds. And if during those 10 seconds nothing good happens for your bet, then generally, then they send your bet for approval. And then someone has to say, yes, you can bet, you know, $500 on this. And then they accept your bet. But if in those 10 seconds something good for your bet happens, generally what happens is that they either reject your bet and offer a worse price. They say that that's not the price anymore. This is the price now. Do you want this price? Or they just reject your bet outright and say, you know, try again. So what's happening is during this process, operators are free rolling their customers during those 10 seconds. They're, you know, if you bet at a timeout, this isn't a problem. There's nobody's getting free rolled again because everyone has the same information. But what's happening if you try to bet during the action is that the operator sits on the bet. Now operators say, well, we need this delay because we'll get front run, right? So they'll say, if we put this up and we don't put the delay on it, well, someone's going to go sit in the football stadium, you know, and as soon as the pass happens, you know, they'll just jam in the bet and, you know, basically, you know, their argument is that they're going to get free rolled, you know, and I have a couple things to say to that. One is, well, you don't have to have a lineup, you know, I mean, it's disinformation, especially for the major American sports, you know, the information is not that hard to know. It's like in football, for instance, you know, when the ball is live or when the ball's dead, you know, when it's between plays or not between plays, you know, you put the bet up between plays when everyone has the same information, and then you don't put the bet up, you know, when you're worried about getting front run. You know, to me it's really that simple. But the other thing is I don't like that answer, because your answer is, well, we might get free rolled, is okay, well, let's free roll everyone who's betting legitimately, who's just sitting at home and watching the game on TV and trying to bet. I mean, the TV's already 15 seconds behind, you know, so most of your customers are going to be watching 15 seconds behind and trying to click in bets. And, you know, as the operator is going to have 100% the information advantage, you know, on that player. So, you know, to me, that's a problem. That's a big problem with the way in-play betting works. I'd like to see the regulations written to address that problem. I'd like them to say, basically, I mean, I think the regulations should say, you know, no delay or delay a maximum of, you know, X seconds, where X is one or two. You know, where there's some legitimate reason for a small amount of latency, you know, but to me, it's not a fair, I mean, it's not really a product if, you know, they get to sit and wait for 10 seconds, you know, on the bet before they decide to take it or not. That's not okay.
Yeah. If your bet wins, it will be refused. If your bet loses, it will be accepted.
Right. I mean, you know, and some operators would say, well, that's not how we do it. We offer you a better. I mean, there's, you know, I'm not saying that I would say some operators 100% are taking advantage of it and free rolling their customers. Like 100%. I've seen it. Other operators are trying their very best, in my opinion, to give an honest bet to their customers, you know, and offering them. If the price gets better, they say, oh, we gave it to you at a better price. That even has problems with it, but they're trying. But to me, the data feeds, especially on the major American sports, are good enough. There's no reason. They don't need it. They're not going to get front run by, you know, someone at the football game. I mean, they're just not. It's the, you know, the data's fast, and you just don't put any bets up while, you know, Tom Brady's throwing the ball down the field. Like the number just is down. You gray the button out, and then when the play's settled, then you put it back up again. I mean, to me, it seems simple.
There's also the problem of that they seem to be barring players like crazy. Like it seems like more sports bettors are getting barred than card counters these days.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's because you can win at sports betting. Every operator is acutely aware that you can win at sports betting, and it's they know where all their vulnerabilities are. They want to, here's the real thing, they want to offer enormous menus, okay? So this is just like I used to enjoy computer security when I was a kid. And there's this principle in computer security that the first thing you do if you want to operate a server is you deinstall and disable every last thing on that computer that you are, that is not critical to what you are using the computer for. If that computer is a web server, you delete the mail server. You delete the, you know, you delete everything that that computer is not doing, and you close all the ports off and you say, this is it. You've got one job and you've got one entrance and one exit, right? So this is a, you know, a tried and true principle in security, right? And if you don't do that, that's called attack surface, because what you're doing is you're giving people, you know, dozens, hundreds of ways to get into you when really you only need to give them one. Well, this is what a lot of sports books are trying to do, right? They say, okay, well, you know, our customers want to bet this. They want to bet that. They want to bet all the time. They want to bet props. They want to bet derivatives. They want to bet first half, second half. So they want to bet on who's going to – is it going to be a run or a pass? They want to bet on all this stuff, okay? So they talk about menu all the time. Let's have a zillion bets, you know, and this is often how they market themselves. We offer more markets. We have more bets than anybody else, which is great, except that's attack surface, okay? That's what it is. Is your the more markets you offer – the more you're saying, come and get us. I mean, that's just a core. I mean, there's no way around that. And so in my opinion, you know, operators should put more thought into trying to balance that trade-off. You know, no, you don't want to just have one bet and say take it or leave it. You want to have more than one bet, but you want all your markets to be solid, right? You don't want to be scared of your shadow. You don't want to be scared that every time you put a market up, someone out there is going to come kill you, you know? And on the markets that you're scared of that, well, set the limits low, take the bet, take the lumps here and there. I mean, it's, you know, I think operators have gone to this, hey, let's have an enormous menu. And now that makes them scared of everything. And so, because they're scared of everything, they just start banning people left and right. I mean, to me, that's so clearly not the optimal way for an operator. It's not customer friendly. It's not. I don't think it's like. I think in many cases, it's you know, can tread into bad faith. Certainly gets you closer to bad faith than if you don't run your business that way. And bottom line, the operators are in the business of taking bets. I mean, you know, they make their money when people bet. And the more people you say you can't bet, I mean, it's just so clear. I think a lot of this is growing pains. You know, some people are worried this is kind of the model, the European model is how they call it. And, you know, they think it's going to take over. But, you know, and it might. And to be honest, I'm a little concerned about it, too. But, you know, I think it's so obviously not the optimal way to run one of these operator businesses that, you know, I think with competition, and as long as we have, you know, regulations in this country that aren't too onerous on the operators, that, you know, that kind of operator will end up kind of losing in the end.
Well, I think two things would help tremendously. One would be to allow a really smart operator in, someone like Pinnacle, who actually knows how to run a sports book.
Mm-hmm.
And it would kind of force other people into line, or they would just lose a lot of business, right? And the other possibility is to move into, you know, a betting exchange,
right?
Where the margins can be very thin, and you can have every bet in the world up there,
right? You can. I mean, betting exchanges are a whole nother thing. I think betting exchanges actually have a number of competitive disadvantages. I think it's going to be hard to start a betting exchange. I wouldn't want it to be my business, I guess is my point. I wouldn't want to be the owner of the betting exchange, because it's a tough business. It relies on, you basically have to find market makers, and the market maker incentive equation is fragile, because once you get big enough, once you get to be a big enough market maker, you know, on a platform like a betting exchange, it starts to become, well, why am I not an operator, right? Why am I not in complete control? Why do I have to pay, you know, my 30%, cut or whatever to the exchange. You know, I'm paying these guys a fortune. I'm constantly frustrated with their software. They don't listen to my complaints. I'm their main customer. They wouldn't have markets without me. Why don't I do, you know, so betting exchanges are always going to have that problem where, you know, without the market makers, they don't really have a market. I mean, there's no market maker, there's no market. But then you've got these market makers, and the market makers have to commit to your platform, commit to your rules, have to pay you a large amount of money.
Well, you know, don't have to charge them a large amount.
You don't have, no, correct. You don't have to, but this is the model that the exchanges tend to use. I'm not an expert on betting exchanges. I just, you know, from my perspective, you know, that, and then in the U.S., there's just like the federal state issues. I mean, trying to get liquidity across state. I mean, I'm not negative. I mean, I love the concept of a betting exchange. I just think there's a lot of kind of logistical problems, you know, as far as making them really, truly, truly viable. I think the answer, I think we're going to have smart operators. That's what I think. I mean, I'm fundamentally optimistic that a lot of these operators who, in my opinion, are taking the easy route. They want everything and they don't want to pay for it. That's the current situation. They want the menu. They want a zillion bets. They want every customer in the world. They don't want anyone to win. Not a single person. They want, you know, they want to hold all the money. They want everyone to keep playing, you know, and it's all new and everyone's rushing the market and all this stuff. And I think competitive pressures will kind of knock some of those expectations in the line. And I've already, you know, there are a lot of smart people in the American that I've already met, you know, just in the last year, really, who have been interested in, you know, doing stuff in the U.S. on the operator side that I do believe. I don't have any opinion about Pinnacle specifically, but I think we're going to get the smart operator that you're thinking of. I think that person is going, those people are in the business already, and a lot of them are launching, are small at the moment, or just, I mean, the whole industry is small, the licensed industry, you know, and, you know, I think the competitive pressures are going to knock this the way I think they're going to. But I could be wrong. I mean, maybe I'm dead wrong, and what we're going to get is 8% hold forever and ever, and everyone's going to get banned. And, you know, I mean, I'm really not going to have a place in any of this if that's the way it goes. So
you'll be writing about poker again.
Right. Or something.
All right. So we've been talking to Ed Miller. We're going to take a brief break for commercials, and we have plenty of questions more for Ed shortly.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In January, Monday through Thursday, there's the $500,000 spin to win promotion. Play $500 coin in slots or $2,000 in video poker and spin a virtual wheel on your machine. Prizes range from $5 to $100 in cash. Points range from 2,500 to 100,000, which means 750 through 300. The prizes are weighted towards the lower end. Last year, they were about $12 on average each time. This year, they're higher. They're somewhere, my experience so far through 3 weeks of this, is about $17 per spin. This adds quite a bit. This is like triple points 4 days a week, because single points is 0.3 at the South Point. There's a limit of 4 awards per day, meaning $8,000 coin in for video poker players. Every Monday, senior day, half price meals, bingo if you use your points. The new semester of free video poker classes, free video poker class. The next one is January 30th at noon. It will be 9-6 Jacks or Better Multi-Strike. Multi-Strike is a four-line game where you pay for all four lines at once. The strategy is different for all four lines. The game returns more than 99.8%, which means you have a slight advantage 24/7. And with the 0.3 slot club. In January, you have a lot more because they have the extra bonuses. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month, or $79.95 a year. This allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Face Card Frenzy. You may play this game anywhere from 6 coins to 10 coins per line, with the odds improving as you increase your bet. In this game, full houses and quads, including jacks, queens, kings, and aces, return a lot more than usual. To make the math work, all pay schedule categories are bumped up, meaning that you need an entirely new strategy to play this game. In addition, there's some unusual pays, such as four deuces through kings with a face card kicker pay a lot more than four deuces through kings without a face card kicker. So you're going to have to work this out. The Video Poker for Winners softwares will cover all this if you make a lot of adjustments to it, but it requires a lot of work to get it ready for one particular game. We're back to Ed Miller. Before we go back to sports betting, Ed's also in the poker world, and the poker world lost one of its colorful members in the past week. Gavin Smith was a young man. He was on this show once, barely knew him. He seemed like a very bright, fun-loving, and hard-living guy. He'll be missed. Okay, another question on for Ed Miller, not on sports betting, but on sports. In the past year or so, the helmets in the NFL, a lot of them, have these hexagonal patches on the front of the helmets. Some players have them, some players don't. It's a six-sided hexagonal, meaning the one side is flush with the helmet, but the other is either loose or a black substance around there. I have not been able to figure out what it's all about. Ed, do you happen to know?
So my understanding is that this is a new helmet technology that is designed to spread out the impacts, the force of impacts. I think they're trying to reduce concussions. Obviously, we know that concussions are a huge problem in a lot of sports, but obviously, especially the NFL and football in general. And I think this is an attempt to make helmets safer.
You know, you were mentioning before the show that Tom Brady doesn't use one. And
Drew, the pictures of Tom Brady, he doesn't have it. And Drew Brees does. They both play the same position.
Yeah, it just reminds me of when seatbelts, you know, first came into cars when I was a kid. And there were a lot of guys who were like, I wouldn't wear one of those, you know, like as if it was some reflection on your manhood or something. It just seems crazy. Yeah, like, if it might help, wouldn't you?
In the 80s, they made helmets mandatory for NHL hockey players. But they were grandfathered. Anyone who was in the league prior to the rule could play without a helmet. So there were these, like, by like 1990 or so, there were these like two or three like just rough dudes out there with no helmet. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think wearing a helmet is a good idea and probably the best technology. But
and do they so like a crumple zone in a car? That kind of an idea.
I think that's the idea. Yeah, I mean, it makes some sense, I guess.
Would they, but you get banged a little bit every week. Would they get new helmets every week?
I kind of bet in the pros, I don't know. I kind of bet in the pros they do get helmets frequently. So hopefully.
Yeah, as much money as there is in the NFL. I mean, I would think they could, you know, they might get a new helmet every quarter if they need one.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they certainly should. I mean, you're not supposed to wear your bike helmet after you get in a crash. And I mean, who knows? I don't know. But I would think new helmets frequently is a good idea.
All right. Like changing your underwear in case you get a concussion, you want a brand new helmet on. Okay. We recently had a sports bettor guest named Spanky on our show. He maintained that betting sports in Las Vegas is an extremely difficult way to make money. Much preferred online betting. Do you concur?
So there's sort of main differences between what's available, in Las Vegas and now what's available in the other licensed jurisdictions and what's available offshore. I mean, I think the main reason is that I don't know, there aren't very many licensed operators in Las Vegas or anywhere in the country that don't sweat big bets and don't kick people out, don't, you know, so basically, you know, you can bet as long as they're pretty sure you lose, or you can bet if, you know, if you want to bet small, like quite small usually, but if you want to bet, you know, close to their limits, you want to bet frequently and they think you're going to win, almost every licensed operator is going to take some kind of countermeasure. You know, some will just kind of cut your limits a little bit. Some will cut your limits a lot. Some will kick you out completely. But there's very few who will just take your money. There are a couple of operators who operate offshore who take large limits and don't limit anyone. So that's probably what he's referring to. Yeah. And some of those have, you know, lower holds on their markets than others too. So, you know, that's probably what he's talking about. And this is another reason I think if people are serious about making licensed sports betting a thing in this country, a successful thing, and by people, I mean all the stakeholders, I mean operators, I mean people who work at the leagues, I mean bettors, I mean everybody, I mean media people, I mean everybody who's interested in this, I think they need to look at what some of these offshore operators are doing well, and I think they need to do it better. I mean, they can't just stick their head in the sand and say, you know, this doesn't exist, this is not a thing. I mean, that it's just not reality, you know, and there are lessons they can learn, and I'd like to see them learn some of those lessons.
Say, you know, it's the same seems to be true for card counters, that Las Vegas seems to be one of the worst places for card counters to play. So they just seem to have lost their stomach for gambling in Las Vegas.
It's still probably best for video poker, although it's not, definitely not as good as it used to be. The number of places that offer games reasonably competitive, meaning more than 99% with a slot club, is much, much higher in Las Vegas than it is elsewhere.
I think it probably, if I had to think, it probably comes down to what they think your perceived edge is. You know, that in video poker, they're probably not sweating it as much because they know the edges are smaller, you know, in the 1% range. And I think they're worried, I mean, in sports and in some other stuff, I mean, you can get big edges, 10% more bigger edges. And I think they know they can get hurt real fast on those type of edges. And I think there's like a pride thing. There's like a human element to it. I think, you know, if you're at a table game, there's a dealer and there's a pit boss that are responsible for that game, you know, and they view it, whether it makes sense or not, as like you against them. And I think there's some of that same dynamic in sports too. You know, they view it as, you know, I mean, there's someone on the other end of your bet that says yes or no. And I think it's sort of more personal and adversarial. And this is just my guess, you know, whereas machine play there's not necessarily a person that's going to take it as personally. But maybe there is. I don't know. Maybe.
A lot of players are getting kicked out of video poker and slots these days.
Yeah.
We're airing this show on January 24th. The Super Bowl's coming up a week and a half later. We know it's going to be the Patriots and the Rams. Now, in addition to normal bets on Super Bowls, they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prop bets. At the time we're taping this, those prop bets have not released. So you do not have to reveal, this is a good one, that's a bad one. But in general, do you like prop bets? And what kind of bets do you look for?
So, yeah, I mean, prop bets are great. The reason prop bets are good, as opposed to like side and to main side and total bets, is precisely kind of what I said about how the pregame markets get booked in the first place, where, you know, they start with lower limits and then they move up. And then by the time that, you know, you can bet real money on it, the market is mature and the edges are generally much thinner. In prop bets, you know, for Super Bowl props, they often open up at essentially the full limit of what they're willing to take on the props, or they open up you know, willing to take, you know, substantial money, you know, especially spread across multiple different places. And those bets are all originated, you know, in-house, I think, or most of them. So what I mean by that is they're not copying the screen for that. There's no outside feedback. There's nobody who's already taken, you know, several hundred bets on this market, and then you're getting to benefit from that information. You know, basically I don't know exactly how they do it, but they come out with a sheet on Thursday and say, come and get them. And someone has to make those numbers. And my guess is it's basically just someone in a room who sits down and makes those numbers, you know, and, you know, they don't have to make those numbers very well, you know, is the bottom line. And so if you can get in and bet all the stuff that's off, you know, it's just easier for them to make mistakes. I mean, it's another attack surface thing. I mean, they're putting out 300-500 markets, you know, on this stuff, and they stick their finger in the air and come up with a number and put it out and say, come and get it. And there's going to be opportunities, you know, whereas, you know, in main markets where there's a screen and all this other stuff, it's just, you know, that there's more of a benchmark for them to kind of stay close to. And
so, but the ones who can take advantage of those soft lines are the sharpest players.
I mean,
mostly the general public would not know if a line on Tom Brady total yards versus Jared Goff total yards plus some number.
Right.
At minus 250, you know, we have no idea if that's a good bet or not.
Right. So there's levels of sharpness. And this is another thing. I think this is a whole concept I think the industry kind of gets a little wrong or oversimplifies. There's a spectrum of sharpness, right? So the industry tends to talk about players as like mugs because it comes from England, but like people who really, I mean, they barely have even watched a football game and they're going to come in and bet. So that's their idea of like that customer. And then their ideas of like super sharp people who have, you know, machine learning models and like who, I mean, I don't know, you know, and they don't leave a lot of space in between. Well, the fact is like a lot of the customer base is in between. So if you don't know anything about football, you're not going to find any of those 500 bets and you're not going to find a single good bet out of those 500 if you don't know anything about football. But let's say you're an avid football player, but you don't have a model, you know, you don't have a computer science degree, but you watch football. Well, some of those bets you'll be able to pick off. You'll look at it, you'll say that's not right. You know, that's the number of touchdowns is wrong. That's for that to be right, this and this and this would have to be the case, and that's not this game, and for whatever reason. So there's some subset of those prop bets that you're gonna be able to pick off just with football knowledge and just, you know, the total's high. Why? Because these are great offenses. You know, someone's going to hang a touchdown number or something that's based on an average game. This is the kind of mistake you might find. So, like, the total's very high. It's because these are really good offenses. Someone's going to start their, you know, some prop bet as if this were just an average game with average offenses. And that's the kind of number that someone like that will just look at and be like, well, that ain't right. Because Tom Brady or whatever, right? So then... And then, you know, the sharper you are, the more you have, you know, models and the more work you've put into it, work really, you know, the more you're going to be able to find these bets that are off. And you're going to be able to, you know, rather than just eyeballing it, you're going to say, well, I think that bet's off, you know, 2%, you know, I make it this, they have it, you know, 2% cheaper, I'm going to buy it, you know, type of thing. So that's the sort of spectrum of sharpness. But you know, definitely there's so many good bets that on that release day that I'm sure people can find something if they follow it. Yeah.
Frank B and Anthony Curtis have talked on that subject before. They say you get to make one bet at a time, and then you have to stand in the back of the line again. And so it's a question of there's so many good bets, but you only can make one. So you have to prioritize which are the best ones and which one are likely to be there by the next time you get up to the front of the line again.
Yeah. And well, they're also – the other wrinkle is some of them are letting you bet it on the app. Most of the time, the ones I've seen, at least in recent years, they've often opened it like at the counter, and then like half an hour later, they'll open it on the app. So you can – that's another wrinkle. And there's no limit to what you can bet on the app. they don't make you bet one bet every 5 minutes or something on the app. So,
well, there's a betting limit. Well,
there's serious limits as far as how much money they'll take. But no, there's no like, you know, go stand at the end of the line type of
Then they have 30 minutes of information where they've adjusted everything.
Right. Well, I'm sure that's the idea. I'm sure that's why they put that little, I don't know. It's a lot of fun. I've done it in past years where it's that blitz of just trying to get as much down on the soft stuff as you can. And it's fun. And sometimes it works out great. And last year I didn't win and it was bad, but you know, it's fun. And, it's legitimate. I mean, the thing is like, the thing that's so great about the sports betting and what I think is so great in general is this idea is you can win, right? Why do people play poker? It's because there's skill to it. It's because you can be better than the next guy and you can win. And I think there's
even if you're a losing player, you think you can win.
Well, right. Or you feel like I have an angle, right? You know, I saw something and that's going to make me go bet this, you know, and that's, I think that's fun. I think that's why a lot of people like to bet. I certainly think that's why a lot of younger people like to bet. You know, all this moaning about millennials don't want to play slot machines. Well, no, but they'll do that. I mean, they'll watch a football game and then go bet on, you know, their angle for sure. And just people being scared of that makes no sense. And I think you need to embrace that. You need to let those people, you know, make their bets and let them, you know, click as many times as they want on the in play and let them bet their angles. And, you know, they'll lose eventually, but some of them will win in the short term. And that's going to keep them interested and make the whole product better for everybody, I think. So that's kind of like my whole take on sport. Like, props make sports betting fun.
Do you bet the no safety?
I don't. No. There's just way too much other stuff to bet.
That's
from my perspective.
Yeah.
Very good. That seems like a good place to wrap this up. We've been talking to Ed Miller on sports betting, usually on poker, but now on sports betting. So thank you very much, Ed. We're going to want you to come back and visit us again.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been great. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.